Welcome to the Tracking Connections podcast, and thanks for listening.
We feature voices from around the world sharing stories of working intentionally with deep nature connection in ways that transform lives, families, projects, and communities. I'm Sarah.
I'm Aiden.
And I'm John.
And we are your hosts from Living Connection First.
Hey everyone, Sarah here. We are here with Dan Gardoki as our guest speaker today.
Hey everyone, it's Aiden. And I'm excited to be talking about bird language and mentoring with Dan today.
Yeah, John here. I'm super excited to be connected with you, Dan, after all these years. I lost track of how many decades it's been, but I think it goes back into the 1980s somewhere when you were a sophomore at high school when you joined our wilderness club. So nice to be able to have this conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is Dan, and thanks for having me. Stoked to connect here today.
I mean, we have to mention the fact that my mentor of 53 plus years passed away on August 16th, Tom Brown Jr. If it wasn't for his mentoring of me, which happened mostly at my sit area, my sit spot in the forest near my parents' home, where he asked me questions every day. He had me go there every day. When I came back, he would call me in the evening and he would ask me questions. You know, what happened today? Where'd you go? And he'd ask me lots of very probing questions. And essentially through the act of asking questions and relaying little snippets of story to me, I began to not only recognize birds. At first, you know, they were just sort of, you know, these things that randomly flew around me. I paid no attention to them, you know. So I was like 10. And then little by little, you know, they started to get names. You know, in the beginning, they were just a little brown bird. I couldn't figure out what it was. And that eventually became a wren. And, you know, that became a Carolina wren and so on. Oh, there's the male Carolina wren. There's the female. But that was all from him asking questions. And then probably after 3 years of doing this every day and him asking me questions virtually every day, me telling my stories every day, mapping, journaling, all that, I began to figure out things like something just walked by me through the hedge. I could tell because of the chipmunks and the birds making these alarms. And by that point, I knew the junco. I knew, you know, the white-throated sparrow. You know, I knew some of the guys and gals around me, but I began to figure out bird language. But there is no way I could be sitting here having this conversation. I could never have written the book, What the Robin Knows, which, by the way, Dan was the science editor for. I couldn't have done that if it wasn't for the mentoring of Tom Brown, which of course he wouldn't have figured it out if it wasn't for the mentoring of his elder grandfather, who was an Apache scout. And for the Apache scouts, you needed to know bird and animal language. You just basically had to. It was a matter of survival. And I think about that, you know, mainly in honoring and memory of Tom, you know, how much I love that guy and how grateful I am for what he did for me, but then how I couldn't help but do the same for those who had that, you know, self-motivation to do the same kind of stuff. And Dan, you were one of the first people that actually really took to that water and swam, you know, the breaststroke, you know, you really went for it. So, you know, any reflections you have on learning bird language and, you know, how you came upon it? Because obviously we have to do the work ourselves. It's, you know, my role to ask questions, but it's your job to go pay attention to patterns.
Yeah, or even know that patterns exist or understand who's involved in patterns. So that makes me think, you know, now that 35 what-ish years into this process and still feeling like a juvenile at times in terms of learning and knowledge, there's no doubt to me that bird language and tracking, I mean, bird language is just a subset of tracking. To me, I define tracking as paying attention to the movement of energy. So bird language is like the paintbrush painting the picture, you know, or the landscape here of what's happening around us in terms of sound and movement. And sometimes it's even smells. You know, when we engage our senses, we're paying attention. We pay attention to change. We pay attention to what is baseline, what do we expect versus what do we, you know, what's a change in that? To me, that's all tracking. And so from a pretty early, actually, I don't even know, relatively early part of our relationship, I quickly realized I needed to pay attention to birds and I needed to be doing it all the time. was probably a couple of years in, because actually, just like you, I didn't even know they were there. I was more motivated to go. I was really into chasing deer. It was just some instinct in me to go get close to wild deer. And this little park between the house, basically where you grew up and where I was growing up, ironically, same watershed there. And I wanted to do that. And when I heard the of the deer bounding and running away from me, I never heard the birds that were also calling before that and during that and after that until you started asking me about it when you said, what's going on? Why can't you get close to those deer? You know, and then eventually you just said, well, what are the birds saying? And it just was like a what? Like, it just made no sense to me. I didn't even think like nothing like that mattered. So then all of a sudden I had to pay attention. And for me at the beginning, it was the jays. And here in the east of North America, it's the blue jays. And, you know, they're the tattlers. They're the ones who are extremely social and vocal and telling us a lot about what's happening, sometimes directly, sometimes intentionally, indirectly. Sometimes I don't know what they're doing and why they're doing it, which is fabulous. But that was the beginning of really listening to birds. And then I started to realize, you know, after we started spending more time camping and in the dark and going on little fun missions and, you know, kind of playing little scout games and all sorts of other stuff like that, that the birds were going to be extremely helpful in telling me what was happening and tracking the movements of everything else around me. So, yeah, you know, it wasn't very clear to me what was happening, but I just know, like, always, I remember one of my first memories of, like, listening through a wall, which wasn't very hard because I think it was, like, a canvas tent wall, to, like, a bird language sequence happening outside. And then turning my head to, like, look in the little opening of this wall to see what popped out. And I noticed you were doing the same thing. I'm like, oh, okay, he is doing this all the time, too. Like, I didn't even know that was a thing. So, yeah. And then from then on out, it's just, it's not something I can shake. It's not something I want to shake. Doing my best to listen to what's happening beyond my own little bubble is something I strive for. I don't always succeed at, but it makes my life so much richer.
It's funny. That thing you're describing really makes me think of my teenage years. And once you sort of come to that realization that others are paying attention, the paranoia that sets in, that you don't want to be the one that is like, what? I wasn't paying attention. I have no idea what happened, right? You're sort of existing in this constant space of high alert.
Yeah, definitely true for me as well. And I think that speaks a little bit to having people, like having a family, having a culture, having a little group to be engaged in all this work with is really critical. Not necessarily vital or, you know, required, but boy, is it helpful to notice where people are at, who's paying attention to what, who's noticing what, because there's just so much we can't notice. There's so much we can't see. And we all have different levels of curiosity as well. Hugely important.
You don't accidentally discover bird language. You might notice things like, oh, the birds get mad when my cat moves through the yard and I see them mob the cat, right? People make those observations if they're out in their yard. They might notice that crows come after red-tailed hawks. You know, it's pretty obvious, right? But it's also, I don't know what the conditioning is, you know, in modern times where, you know, birds, yeah, they're just random feathered things that make a bunch of noise and poop on my car, you know, and you don't really find a door in unless you have someone to tell a story to. You know, I got this question that was really interesting. Like, what just happened? You know, that bird alarm sequence that we heard, you know, from the tents, right? Hey, what is that? Like, now there's two or three of us looking at it, and now we're curious, right? So there's a pattern, and then we're lifting up that pattern. Then we're talking about that pattern together, asking each other questions and, you know, coming up with theories and that sort of thing. And I remember, Dan, somewhere in the early 90s, I want to say, in Middletown, and we were thinking, we had this little batch of apprentices that we were trying to teach, and we had, you know, programs that we were running and what have you in Monmouth County, New Jersey. It's like, I wonder if we could speed up the bird language learning process. Do you remember that? We're like, what if we all do SitSpot at the same time? You know, and then we all come back and tell our stories. And that gave birth to, one, a fantastic model for learning bird language, much quicker than you and I learned it, right? Because it was kind of slow going. And then it also, I probably learned more than everybody else during that time, because I learned all these nuanced patterns that I didn't see before without the gift of having 30 sets of eyes on a landscape simultaneously, journaling all at the same time, time stamping, mapping, and we could come back and be like, wow, the Cooper's Hawk must have been over here. And then someone said, oh, I think I did see a hawk. You know, it flew really fast. I wasn't sure, you know, and we're like, damn, right? Like, it was just so cool. I think I heard a weasel alarm. I saw the weasel hopping by over here, right in the same area, you know, that whole thing. It just like nailed it for me. You know, I had I guess I would say kind of a decent competence in bird language. But I would say when you and I started leading groups in bird language on a regular basis, that's when it just went to a whole nother level for me. I wonder if you have any reflections on that, because I mean, that just plays right off of what you were just saying about, you know, having a group, a family, or, you know, people to share this with, right?
Yeah. And that's a great point. It could be people from all over the place who temporarily gather and have a practice of paying attention. And I would guess all of us, you know, Sarah, Aiden, you and myself, all as facilitators of group experiences, regardless of the learning, there's just so much that the facilitator gets, so much. And I think because we're tracking all the time, we're tracking what are people noticing, what aren't they? We're tracking, like, what did I miss? And, like, what perspective might this person have that I haven't considered? And how did they get there? Like, what is their training and practice like so that they're noticing things? Or having, you know, like what leads them to say this statement? That could be literally a physical practice. It could be, you know, their own internal practices and intuitive levels, whatever it is. There's so many different ways of being out there. So when we get a group together, super helpful. Yeah, it's funny you should mention that early. It was the early 90s and 1990s. So the late 1900s for you youngins here. We were doing this and it's funny. I got asked about this probably 8 or 10 years ago. I was leading a bird language week-long intensive, and someone was kind of challenging what we were doing and saying it was someone else's, and I was like, well, it's everybody's. And actually we came up with this process, like, because we wanted to figure out a way to spread this and share this and learn quicker. It's this idea of group bird language sits, and we were tweaking them to try and make them work, and to this day I'm still tweaking them. You know, for a long time, I always made sure everyone sat alone and they're all this distance-ish apart. And, you know, now it's like if somebody's brand new and is super uncomfortable sitting alone, I'm like, oh, you could sit with a friend and just kind of whisper or point or, you know, like, or sometimes I'll rotate around to this little group as they're sitting. If someone has a really kind of pressing question and they're afraid they're going to lose that moment, I can kind of infuse a little bit and then pop back out. That process of what, for a while, we call it kind of bird language sits, which, but basically group bird language learning absolutely elevated the game. And I think for a lot of people, and I know for me, it actually helped codify a method and a learning process, but it also helped make possible things that seemed a little impossible or seemed a little, especially here in the East. So for those of you, we have mostly a very thickly forested landscape in a lot of places here in the East part of the North America, and it's just really hard to see layers of, like, animal movement and even birds sometimes. And so often you're just like, well, maybe this happened, or I don't know, and you just kind of hear like this, like, you're like, wait, what the heck was that little high-pitched thing over there? And you almost never see it because there's this thick canopy and this wall of understory, you know, and then maybe you get the chipmunk going, but you never see the chipmunk. But over time, you'll learn that that's the chipmunk's aerial predator call, because it always does it when the broadwing is around, or it always does it when the red shoulder's around. But you almost never see it. So it's really hard. It takes a lot of trust in the process. And sometimes people would think we were making stuff up or like BSing them, because they're like, oh no, there was a bear on the edge there that was checking out, coming up towards the hives, and then the wind shifted and it smelled us, and it, you know, gave a little of, and kind of went up the hill there. And I was so far away, I didn't notice any of this. But because a group is spread out and because enough people can gather enough intel, the story becomes really clear. And it's not one person making it up or telling the story. It's a group process. So I think that empowered people and made people realize, oh, not only is this stuff, like, possible, it's happening all around us all the time. And we're like, we're just one of the only species not paying attention. Like, and there's so much more we can learn. So super empowering, super exciting. And just making new things possible. So it almost like broke through a little bit of a glass ceiling at the time of like, oh, only certain people could understand bird language. Like, no, not true at all. And when we work together, we understand it better.
Yeah, I love that. It makes so much sense, really, that it would take a village to understand bird language, right? We grew up in tribal communities where, you know, people were out gathering and hunting all day, bringing back the story and then making sense of, oh, this is how, you know, the animals were moving through the landscape. It totally makes perfect sense. Of course, we can't as one person have so many perspectives to create a, you know, a 360 degree view of what's actually happening on the landscape. And yet so many times we are out there alone in these modern times, you know, as nature people, we often are solo. So I remember a couple different bird language experiences that I had out tracking in New Mexico. One, it was like, I got to this place that I'd been to many times, but I got there before sunrise and I sat very quietly under a juniper tree watching mice as the sun rose. And I started walking when the sun rose. So, you know, I'd been there for at least a half an hour, probably 45 minutes, very quietly. And I walked about 20 yards. And all of a sudden, there's alarming, birds alarming in the tree, like 50 yards away. And I'm like, wow, I'm so unquiet that I have disturbed the birds already. Like, I've barely started walking. And here I am creating this alarm. And wow. And they're like way over there. So I must be really disturbing. And as I continued, it was like the alarm was following me, but still kind of parallel, kind of off the trail. And at that moment, I was like, it was a little bit behind me also. So I was like, am I actually making that bird alarm? I don't know if I am. Anyway, it's a longer story. The journey continued for about an hour and a half wander across the landscape. And it wasn't until I got back home and I got to share my story with John, you know, and he was able to reflect back to me, because I was like, I don't think it was me. I think there was somebody following me. Like, I'm pretty sure my feeling was like a coyote was probably making that alarm or causing that bird alarm, but I had no context for that. So it was really awesomely helpful to have John to bounce it off of, but then secondarily, really helpful to journal and map that experience of exactly where the bird language happened and when. And so that's when John introduced to me that technique of mapping bird language with the different symbols and colors and alarm patterns, and painted this 360 degree kind of experience of what the birds were doing and how that, which I believe was a coyote, was moving through the landscape. So I wonder if you have reflections on that journaling process and if you use that with people.
Yeah, thank you so much. That was, I was totally picturing the coyote as soon as you got up. I don't know why. I was like, I think there's a coyote's going to trail her, or maybe down on a river. I don't know. That's so cool. And what a great story too, because you were like so perfectly ripe, like you were so ready for that, or maybe even beyond ready, like, oh yeah, this makes total sense. Like, because you were probably already doing that in your mind is what I hear in that story. And so I think what I will answer your question, but you just made me realize the other thing I think that's happening here when we have a process for trying to understand bird language, and John's line that people don't accidentally learn bird language, is that curiosity cultivates connection, right? So it's the curiosity, not the certainty, not the uncertainty, which can too, but like, so in that story, it's like, I know I was here for a while. I was under this tree, everything was pretty chill. And then I started getting up and there was this motion, and in your instinct is, oh, I'm causing these alarms, right? And so we saw this pattern so many times that instantly most people who, we don't have a lot of experience with this, we just blame ourselves. We're like, oh, you know, people are bad, they cause alarms, or, you know, or blah, 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 which is what we do, or we, whatever, in my experience, my people, my world. And that shuts down curiosity, right? Because we're so sure, so we never even think it's possible that actually, like, there was other, you know, like, larger small mammals or birds of prey right around me the whole time that I just couldn't see or hear or whatever, detect, but they're right there with me, and I'm sharing space with them. And I have no idea that that's happening. And, you know, for me, being raised in like a suburban New Jersey world and, you know, great family, great people, all this kind of stuff, no big major issues, but no one really to facilitate my awareness that there was all these other things I was sharing, all this kin, all this wild neighbors I was sharing the landscape with beyond like seeing roadkill, right? Or something, a flash in front of a headlight, or go to a nature museum and see something there. But I didn't understand that, like, the whole time, I was and we are sharing space with all these with all these other, all these other animals. And so the process of kind of codifying learning bird language and the bird language sits and mapping. And yeah, for many, many years, that is a tool I used rather regularly, especially with big groups doing weekend and week long kind of bird language experiences. And I took a break from it for a little while. And I've been doing, this is interesting, not intentionally, just so it happened. And I've been doing a lot more work with more traditional birders, like people who are like bird, like, you know, going out to like list birds and see certain birds and all that. And it's so interesting, like just asking questions to those people, you know, as a guide and as, you know, tour leader and stuff, and just slowing them down enough to just be like, oh, like, you think that bird's a resident here? Think that bird has a nest nearby? Like, I wonder, where does that bird have something in its mouth? Like, what's that bird might be saying right now? Because a lot of people are just often wanting to see a bird, and they love to see the bird and to look at it and maybe take a picture or see in their binoculars, whatever, but often are not going much deeper than that. But there's millions of those people out there who actually want to go deeper. And so now we see this emergence of the kind of slow birding movement and mindful birding network and all this kind of cool stuff happening in the world of kind of bird appreciation, and what to me is just all about continued nature connection. So I've been trying to figure out some ways to kind of blend those two things, trying to find, not everyone wants to sit down and do like, you know, whatever 45 minute, hour long sit and take all these notes and blah, blah, blah. And other people don't want to run around and try and, you know, get a huge list of birds in a day. So what are some of those intermediate tools and practices we can pick up? And I think just mixing in stopping and slowing down and sitting and listening and asking questions has been like super helpful.
Well, I would love to hear you, Dan, reflect on the benefits of bird language, because I know for myself, I'm very much an animal lover and an avid tracker, and bringing in the awareness of bird language, wow, is so enriching. You know, I would never have known that coyote was actually there, right? It would never have been a question, and I wouldn't have made sense of the journey that, you know, followed that story that I told you. And I certainly find myself seeing far more animals with bird language, right? Multiple stories of never would have looked that direction, never would have paused long enough, you know, to quiet myself down enough to see the bobcat cross the trail in front of me.
Gosh, I mean, there's just so many, but so on a like individual level, I think it's belonging. To me, is the most, that's the biggest benefit, is I think when we, the more we learn about a language that's happening around us that we can literally practice, we can, you know, in many ways, a lot of the courses I teach, I actually stop calling them bird language, but not stop. I just also call them talking with birds, because it's a group process. It's not us just like listening and interpreting what they're saying, because we are in the conversation. It's just whether or not we're going to listen and engage in that conversation and respond, and how are we going to share space with them. The first thing you learn is, okay, there's a whole conversation going on that most wild animals are engaged in and listening to each other. Ground squirrel listens to, you know, California towhee, and, you know, osprey, you know, listens to eagle, and, you know, chipmunk listens to redtail and all this kind of stuff. And we're right there too. So we have the choice to listen and be engaged in that process. And I think once we start to realize that, it's again breaking down these artificial barriers of, you know, humans and nature. It's, you know, it's a more than human world that we are a critical, you know, interesting, integral part of in some ways, but they're also living their own lives with us around. So when we start to speak that language, and you guys know this, I mean, all the stories I hear about all the things going on there at your home and property and all the individual animals you all know and the relationships you have with them, we're just part of the whole, we're just part, we belong. And I think that's extremely empowering for people, especially who have never considered that as even a possibility. And what that does on the inside, how that shifts our kind of heart space and head space is really powerful. And so that can be used in a lot of ways, from just simple, you know, peaceful meditation and coexistence to, you know, I use it when I hunt to eat those animals too. Like, I use it in so many ways. I use it to guide people to see those animals and just watch them. I use it to just, you know, try and understand what's happening right around on our land. And, you know, when I'm doing some scientific work, what's going on with populations of certain birds and surveys. I mean, it can be used in so many ways. And it just, in many ways, makes you a more connected and refined kind of observer and participant in the bigger conversation.
Right now, and
for the last couple of years, I've really lived in a very suburban place, you know, and I've had times where I, you know, my sit spot was on the edge of hundreds of acres or even thousands of acres of land, you know, and there were intimate encounters with cougars, you know, and the bird language that would happen, you know, with the mountain lion passing through or the bobcat. And, you know, now it's more likely the one predator that may show up is the Cooper's hawk, maybe, you know, but most of the time the alarms are for a house cat, you know, or the neighbor's dog. But even then, when I walk around every morning in my neighborhood, the thing that I notice is that because I'm one of the only humans that takes the time to notice what the birds are doing, I notice that curiosity going back in the other direction. You know, and it's not just the birds, it's the rabbits and the squirrels and, you know, and the house cats and everybody's kind of going, oh, wow, you're paying attention. And it's like they're paying so much attention that they notice me noticing them, you know, and it really does start to become a friendship in that way. You know, like I was talking this morning before we hit record about this couple of crows that they live on my block. You know, they are very much my neighbors. And I know the scrub jays that are in my front yard, they have names at this point because you can tell the individuals apart, you know, and here they are visiting, you know. And I think that it also speaks to sort of this idea of, especially when you're alone, the one thing that you can definitely practice by yourself is just once you start to notice the birds, then you can notice what makes the birds fly away. You know, when I'm getting close, now the bird just went up and now they are chipping at me, you know, and how can I next time kind of watch them further away and okay, I'm going to alter my route to go around them. Okay. And now they're not flying away from me. And, you know, just kind of giving them that respect, I notice over time that their space bubble actually gets smaller and smaller and smaller until we get to the point where we know each other. And I walk out the front door and the towhee doesn't fly away. It just kind of looks over at me and maybe it hops, you know, one hop away or whatever. And that takes time, but that's something I think you can do on your own. And it's just really rewarding. I think, you know, you talk about belonging. It's just really fun and joyful. And, you know, for me, it's this daily source of joy.
Yeah. I like that you bring up the changing in relationship. You know, as I'm sitting here speaking to you all, I'm looking out the window at a fawn that we've named Pink and her mother named Red. And, you know, during this podcast, I've had to go out from time to time to chase off the bantail pigeons who overwhelm the feeder, end up causing a feeder to break, like we had a feeder break because of the weight of them. I let them feed a little bit until there's too many of them, and then I have to chase them off. But it's so funny that I did that. I went out the door, you know, kind of waved my arms, clapped my hands, and mother deer and fawn are eating under the persimmon tree just 20 feet to my right when I do it. And they just look at me for a second. They know exactly what I'm doing. They know me.
Yep.
They know Sarah. We have a relationship. So not only do they not run away, but after I come back in, they even come closer, right? The jays come right back. The finches come back. The juncos, everybody, like there's distinct relationships that are built of this awareness. You know, I remember when I was doing this one exercise with my late mentor, Tom. He was doing an online Zoom class and he was having us literally walk out and feel the bubble of our wave affecting other things on the landscape. And he said, be really aware of when you feel the bubble of something else hitting your bubble and then tune into it, right? So what bird language is teaching us is to pay attention to the impact that we have, not only with our movement and our sound, but also with our state of mind. Like if I'm all frantic and full of anxiety and stressed out, like birds fly away from me instantly. If I can get myself down to that real quiet place inside from listening to the quietest sound on the landscape all around me and just relax, I don't create that kind of wave. And, you know, this is one of the greatest things that I've learned from bird language. It teaches me about the effect of my energy on other beings, which then applies to my interaction with other human beings, right? It's made me a little more sensitive, or a lot more sensitive, I would say. So as I'm walking out the front door and going down the patio, really feeling very consciously that I am making a way, whether I like it or not, right? That's the thing. I think people think, well, if I don't pay attention to bird language, then it's irrelevant. But the truth is, the birds are talking about you too. You don't get away with this, right? None of you listening are impervious to the fact that the birds are studying you all the time, even if you're not studying them. The squirrels, the deer, they know you. So you should ask this question, what are they saying about me? And that's a very interesting thing to walk with. So as I'm walking and I'm aware of this bubble, I'm really being conscious of it. I feel like literally feel a bubble push against my bubble. And we were doing some deep sensitizing exercises prior to this, so we could really be aware of our wave that we're creating. And I zeroed in on what felt like a bubble pushing against my bubble. And I zeroed in on what is the source of this bubble. And I couldn't see it right away. So I kind of repositioned myself and moved a little bit further. And then I could see just under the leaf of a plant is this little fence lizard right in the center of a bubble looking up at me. And I swear it was like the way he looked at me, he said, "Are you really feeling that? Are you really feeling that?" I'm like, "I think I really am feeling that." And he's kind of looking at me like, "Cool, human, that's cool," you know? And I've noticed that in being really hyper aware of the effect of my bubble or my wave again on the landscape and all the creatures around me, the lizards used to run away when we moved in here. You know, they literally used to run away. Now they don't run away. And you actually have to be careful not to step on them because they expect you to see them and either step over them or go around them. I mean, it's quite literally like that. And you know, I can only say to the people listening, if this doesn't seem real to you, what my dear mentor used to say, prove me right or prove me wrong. I bet you can't prove me wrong. And so far in 53 years, I never could prove him wrong. There really is something to the relationships that we develop through awareness, through paying attention to our neighbors. And you know, not to see birds as random feathered things that are on a field guide page, but as Dan, you know, expressed so beautifully, yeah, no, they're all living their life and they're, you know, they're individuals just like we are, you know, so it isn't just a sparrow. It's a song sparrow. Well, is it a male or a female? And do you see that one every day? As Aiden was reflecting, the crow, this pair of crows he sees every day. When Sarah and I moved in here, there was a pair of ravens we saw regularly. We weren't sure if it was the same two ravens every day, but over time we got to know those two ravens and we could tell the male from the female and they both got names. You know, the male is Truth and the female is Hope. And the two of them became personalities that really became part of our everyday relationships in the landscape, you know, and they even do us favors, like tell us when the coyote's coming or tell us when the deer are moving. And you know, the birds can be not just beautiful to look at, but they can be marvelous to build relationships with. I guess that's what I'm ultimately saying here.
Yeah, beautiful. And I just want people, maybe there might be some people listening thinking that might seem really far off, really distant, really difficult to imagine that kind of relationship. Maybe not. But if it is, I just want to reaffirm you that we all, every single one of us, we are hardwired to connect. We have the hardware to do this. We are a social species, and we are a species that has spent the majority of its existence interacting and engaging with all the world around us. Literally. That's who we are. And we just need, like, it's almost like getting a little software update, you know, to the hardware. It's just a little reminder, a little prompt, you know. And even if you're a person who struggles with connecting with large groups of people or people you don't know, think about the few people you do have connection with and think about what it takes to be in connection relationship with them. What does that look like? And then we think about how when we're meeting people, how we are sharing space, right? And we can just take those same practices and bring them to the sparrow in the yard, the pigeon in the park, the fox in the hedges. And they take maybe a little longer, maybe not, but often they do. Because you got to remember, all these animals have probably learned that most modern humans are not paying attention to them. And therefore, it can, my judgment, feel very disrespectful to what's going on in their lives when we just plow through them all the time. And we just kind of are like always prioritizing our agenda. And I mean, sometimes I do this too. I'm just in a hurry or I'm late or something, and I'll come flying out the front door and just go, sorry, because, you know, the chickadees and the chipping sparrows are usually right in the cedar there. I'm like, sorry, I'm late, you know, slam the door and go, and they fly up to the wire and kind of give me a little, like, you know, and it's like, hey, it happens. But generally, I want to open that door slowly, and I want to listen to see where they are, and I don't want to slam it, so when I go down those stairs, they can stay doing whatever they were doing. Because, you know, they've got really busy lives. They need, you know, they can't call DoorDash. They don't have fridges. Like, they don't have pantries. They got to get food all day long, you know, especially when it's cold out. So for me to just be like, bah, bust right through there all the time without even thinking about it, kind of being a dick. Like, so I don't want to do that. Like, I don't want that to be my relationship with those birds all the time. I want that to be an outlier, because we can all be jerks now and again. That's just what it means to be alive. But we generally are going to be thoughtful and respectful of each other's space. And so bird language is tracking. Tracking is bird language. It's all about connection, you know. It's all about relationship. So it never stops. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I love that, that being hardwired for connection, and specifically to the birds, right? Because the birds, you know, as hunter-gatherers, it was really important for us to know, you know, where the predators were, and, you know, possibly have those relationships where the birds were also helping us find meat that we would hunt and share the meat with them. I know the raven had that relationship with some Native American tribes. And so also the fascinating new neurobiology, where it's proven that bird song is relaxing to our nervous system. So if we look at that evolutionarily, if the birds are singing, there is no danger, right? I remember tracking a mountain lion, and it was on a very fresh trail, and listening to the bird language so intensely. And this was like in my very beginning of tracking and not really knowing bird language, but there was a pinyon jay nearby. And I was like, you're going to tell me, right? You're going to tell me if I'm in danger, right? Like, I'll notice. Like, I just trusted my nervous system would know if it was saying danger. So I guess that's maybe a question that I have around the naturalness of it, right? Like, is it we're learning the songs of the birds and that means something, or is there some kind of intuitive way that we can access bird language?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why, you know, I tell people right off the bat, don't fret, don't, like, people get, well, you know, where I live, there's about 350 species of breeding bird in this region, southern Maine, today. And, you know, and then most of them have probably at least 4 or 5 vocalizations they can do, some 2, some 52, I don't know. And then, you know, you do the math and it's like, how am I ever going to learn all of it? No, it's not that hard. We are already wired to do this. We're doing it all the time with each other. You know, when you walk in a room and it's a really gnarly vibe in there, you know, when someone's probably talking crap about you and then you walk in a place, like, you know what it feels like. So, like, and I mean, if you think about most media today too, it's constantly capitalizing on these really simple cues that really trigger our fear and trigger our joy, right? And send that little pulse of dopamine. And the same thing's going on with bird song. So when birds are bird vocalizations, when bird song is happening, we're generally feeling quite peaceful, like you said, like, you know, and there's lots of research, like Sarah was just talking about. But also when there's dissonance, you know, when there's dead silence, you know, Hollywood uses this all the time in movies. There's this, like, that long pause, and then often all the birds fly away too. Like, we know when there's trouble, right? So that's the best part. You don't have to even know the names of the birds. You give them your own damn names. They all just have made up names anyway. They've been given names by people for millennia, and they will. So don't hang, like, get. And I'm a total bird nerd and a science geek and all that too. So I respect that stuff, but it's not the only way of doing this. Like, we can just have our own relationships with these birds. We can kind of learn to feel that relationship out, trust our gut and, like, what might be happening, but then test it out a little bit, you know, really notice what does it mean when, you know, if I'm walking out back and, you know, and the Phoebe is just sitting there perched and it's wagging its little tail. Right. And, like, okay, that noise doesn't sound very sing-songy, but, well, that's because it's a flycatcher and it doesn't have the syringeal musculature, yada, yada. But it's still their song because I can feel the vibe off the bird. That's just like, it's upright, it's looking around, it's making this song, it's catching bugs and landing, right? Versus when it tick, tick, tick does this other weird little thing, that means it's pissed off, right? And its body language is different. Now it's leaning forward, it's not thinking about eating, right? It's kind of looking at something else I can't see. So we just got to use our senses and pay attention to our emotions and our responses to things, and we already know how to do this. So you just give yourself permission to be competent at bird language and then just start practicing.
Wrapping up here, you're mention of the Phoebe made me think of this group of kids that I used to work with. And we always met in the same meadow. And there was a volleyball net on the other side of that meadow. And there was a black Phoebe that used to come and sit on the volleyball net and then do its fly catching thing from there. And it would go back and forth. So all the kids, of course, got to know that bird. And none of them knew its scientific name or its common name, but they collectively named it the hooded ninja bird. And that was great because then they all knew the hooded ninja bird, right? And they got to know that bird and they got to know, like, okay, we know what it normally does. It's kind of doing its thing on the volleyball net, you know? And then they would also notice when it would actually fly off and, you know, that indicated some sort of disturbance. So it's really amazing how this stuff happens. And we can look to kids too, because kids aren't hung up on that idea of just making things up, right? So if we look at that, we kind of get back in touch with that idea too. Like, yeah, it's really just about having fun with it and just getting connected. And Dan, I just thank you so much for everything that you have shared today. And I wonder if people want to connect with you, where can they find you these days?
They've got to listen to the bird language. Sneaking around now. Okay. People can find me at Lead With Nature. That's my company's name. You can find me on social media there. And yeah, offer all sorts of things. Online courses, in-person workshops, birding tours, all sorts of things. A lot of consulting and coaching work too. So yeah, feel free to reach out and see if there's something that I can help you with. And it's been just great to spend time with the three of you today. So as always, psyched to continue to be in connection with you all and see how we all continue to evolve in our kind of understanding and communication about the work we all do and we've been doing for a long time. So fun tracking. Fun tracking.
Right on. Well, yeah. Thank you, Dan Gardoki. Yeah. Wonderful to share this time, Aiden and Sarah, and all the birds and animals that speak to us. Thank you all.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks for listening to Tracking Connections. If you enjoy this podcast, it would mean a lot to us if you would take a minute to follow or subscribe. Following the podcast helps us and it helps you because you'll never miss an episode. We'd also love for you to give us a 5-star rating and review and share an episode with a friend. To learn more about our current offerings, visit livingconnectionfirst.net. We'll see you next time.